Hey, America. Start listening now.
Hey, Sam and Danny, how's it going?
Está bien, está bien. No puedo quejar, ni la vida sigue igual. ¿Y tú, cómo estás?
No mange que la poule.
What?
Safe.
¿Qué?
Quel horreur.
¿Quoi?
Sa femme.
Derek, for the love of God.
Poule.
Just roll the music. Hello and welcome to 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, from the people who brought you the film Wild Hogs. I'm Eric.
Yo soy Samantha.
Je m'appelle Danny.
Oh, God.
That's one of my favorite things, actually, is speaking in a foreign language and then just saying something English.
Like, oh, and not like completely dropping any sort of inflection.
Yes, absolutely one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Or having something spoken in English with the accent remaining. Like, when I was living in Chile, there would be a advertisement for Domino's Pizza when I was watching Sábado Gigante.
Yes.
And
like, Domino's Pizza.
Con los buffalo chicken kickers.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
It's like one of my favorite things is like France, the country that invented sex appeal, did not have a word for sexy, so they borrowed the English word, so it's just like, and it's kind of sexy. And it's like,
for real?
Yes. Exactly.
I haven't gotten to that in
it's
Duolingo.
It's just very bizarre. Is it sexy?
Sexy.
Ooh, I do not want that. Same thing with German, except it's sexy.
Which actually is a little bit sexy.
That is a little. Yeah, that's way sexier.
A little sexy.
Well, guys, if you couldn't tell, we are talking about languages today, especially how they fit into our favorite crazy contest. The history, what works, what doesn't, what kind of wonderful things have we heard at Eurovision, what have we yet to hear? So, guys, where are we going to start?
Well, I think we got to start with some Eurovision news that has nothing to do with languages.
Well, speak of using language.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm planning to do so.
Well, I call Noam Chomsky, noted linguist and word expert.
Yeah?
We'll do some news.
Okay.
And then Noam will be here.
Oh,
nice.
Oh.
I'll get him on the phone.
That's great.
Sweet.
Anyway, so what do we got?
Well, biggest thing I saw in the last week or so, I think, is that the UK, and we've talked about their recent struggles a few episodes ago, and the last few years they've done a national final, and I guess they've decided that's not working for them, because apparently they are
well.
This isn't 100% confirmed, I don't think, but it appears they are going back to an internal selection, and they are working with BMG, one of the world's largest record labels, to find an artist.
So that could be one of many, many things. Like I said, like you said, they haven't really confirmed that the internal selection is a go, and that your country needs you, Eurovision pre-selection is out. But that seems to be the indication. But with BMG, they've got such a massive stable of artists.
I was going to say, who are the British artists that are currently with BMG? Do we even have a list?
No, there's a lot. It's like the third largest label in the world. It also means, because they're using BMG, that they'll be able to get 12 CDs for the price of one.
Good.
Wow.
Good.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I hope this goes well for them. I'm sticking to my prediction that they're going to surprise us.
That's right.
They're going to surprise us.
Danny predicted a UK victory
UK
in 2020.
UK or Malta.
UK or Malta.
That's it.
I mean, they could pick a well-known act. They could pick somebody completely off the radar and just like, oh, here's somebody on our farm team that we're just, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe it's a songwriter that they've worked with and somebody new. Who knows?
It's a lot of speculation,
but it's really delicious.
Yeah, get like an unknown artist, but have Ed Sheeran write the song, something like that.
Yeah, who knows?
We have to.
Well, that's just one example.
Do we really have to?
No, we don't. We don't.
Okay, okay.
Spain also going back to internal selection.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They've been doing this link in with Operación Triunfo, Operation Triumph, as their national selection.
It sounds ominously fascist, but go on.
It hasn't worked well for them, frankly.
Fascism? I wouldn't say so.
No.
Oh, boy.
Nicky was so good last year.
He was. And then they put him in front of a giant Billy bookcase.
Oh,
my
God.
They really did.
His national final selection performance was so good, too. Like, that was the perfect way to perform that song. Like, it was a party.
Yes.
And then they did that other thing.
With
it was
the Wicker
so frustrating.
Man. And
yeah.
Like, no.
It was a mess.
It was a mess.
It didn't help that they hadn't go last either.
That's
but,
true.
But you know, if he'd been in a prime spot, he still would have had that staging, and it still would have been
not great.
Not great. So, yeah.
I see we have Junior Eurovision news, too.
Yeah, we've got all sorts of Junior Eurovision news. We haven't really talked a ton about Junior quite yet. I guess as we get closer to the November 24th show,
mm-hmm.
we'll probably talk a little bit more. Maybe we'll do a preview show. Who knows? We'll see. That will be held in Gliwice, Poland. So, kind of small town, sort of southern, western Poland, not too far from Krakow, I think.
Okay.
Beautiful town from all the pictures I've seen. We got 19 countries in this year's contest. So we say goodbye to Azerbaijan and Israel from last year, but we welcome back Spain, who hasn't taken part in well over a decade. So very happy to see that.
That's exciting.
Yeah. We've got two songs and artists picked. We've got, you know, so we actually have the recording of the song and everything. We've got 9 singers announced altogether. Plenty more to come. It's just really kind of an exciting thing to see all these songs go on their national finals for a lot of these countries. So, you know, more news will be coming up for that. So
I just think they need to call it June Eurovision.
No.
And I think we still need to get to the most important bit of news, which is Maruv.
Maruv Watch.
Maruv Watch is back.
Yes.
Sam, how's Maruv doing?
She's still in it. Our girl lives to fight another day. She had a special moment on the last episode of Dancing with Stars in Ukraine.
Dancing with Stars.
Yes. So she did a Paso Doble, which if you know anything about the Paso Doble, you imagine matadors and flowy dresses and drama, 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 sort of like what a tango is, but even with more drama and bullfighting. Blah, 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 blah. But imagine that with a Slavic disco circa 1994 with bare chests, and it was amazing. And you can find this easily on YouTube. I highly, highly recommend that you check it out. She got 35 points out of 40, including 3 tens from the 3 judges, including the prima ballerina,
yes.
Sander, in that first week.
So wait, who gave her the 5?
Some sort of I think he was an American. He was giving his comments in English. He was basically just like, I don't know what's going on. This is a Paso Doble. You're acting like a clown. You know, I don't see the technique beyond the clownery. And he, like, marked her way down. And everybody else was like, 10!
Jeez. So, you know, that's disgraceful. You know, people should never, ever listen to Americans.
Never.
Especially
when we're
talking about European style.
Oh, no, stop.
Don't.
Didn't mean that.
I did.
Oh, okay.
So.
Just pretend we're Canadian and we're good to go.
Yeah. Eh?
Eh?
Ooh, routine? Like how we're going to do when we go to France.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's going to backfire when they think you're from Quebec.
That's right. They know how to speak French, but they sound weird. Definitely be from Montreal.
Sounds good.
Sounds about right. So anyway, our topic of discussion for this week, language at Eurovision. Where do we want to start, guys?
Well, I think we should start by talking about the rules regarding languages, or lack thereof right now, but that hasn't always been the case.
Very true. Very, very true. Up until 1966, nobody seemed to have any rules in place about what language a country could send a Eurovision song in.
So they sang in Esperanto.
All the time.
Because they could.
Yes. All Esperanto, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was basically fair game that you could sing whatever language you wanted to. People tended to sing in their own national languages, but that basically just wasn't even a question. Starting from 1966... through 1972, there's actually a rule in place that a singer could only sing a song in one of the official national languages of the country that they were representing.
Hmm.
Which is great if you come from a country with multiple languages, like the Swiss were rolling in it.
Yes. But it's a shame, you know, there are, you know, English is a beautiful language to sing in, and Italian is a beautiful language to sing in, but, you know...
Like German?
I don't know if the Dutch would be particularly... You know, we're going to get some flack from the Dutch for this episode, but
yeah.
I do have to say, you know, compared to our own biased languages, I think there's a reason why there aren't Dutch operas.
The thing is, they won some of those really early contests. They won in 57 and 59 and 69.
Mm-hmm. But to be fair, they also had the benefit of being in smaller pools.
Very true.
Smaller competing pools.
Very, very true. And also, you know, if you speak Dutch, you mean the Germans will probably understand you.
Mm-hmm.
They'll understand you in half of Belgium.
Yes.
Yeah, Luxembourg was still participating. So, you know, it was a little bit more universal than it is now. Anyway, from 1973 to 1976, it was completely open. You can sing whatever language you wanted.
It was
to.
The Wild West of Eurovision.
It really was.
And then after 76, in 77,
mm-hmm.
that's when we went right back to the old rules again.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Actually, it's a funny story. It looks like in 1977, the EBU brought back the rule, okay, you have to sing in one of your national languages. But Germany and Belgium had already started to select their song for the contest, and they'd already picked something in English.
In English, so they were allowed to,
yeah, they were
just
given.
Because they got in before the deadline.
Basically, yeah.
Good for them. Did
I
they
know,
win?
Right?
They
in 77?
Did either of them? Was 77 one of the Israel years?
No, 77 was France's last win.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
That was their last win?
I know.
Oh, France.
I know.
Poor baby.
Anyway, so Germany... Germany and Belgium came in 8th and 7th, respectively. So, you know, top 10, that's not shabby in a contest of 18.
The 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was a language rule in place from 1977 through 1998. So a pretty long span of time.
And a lot of that, especially like in the 90s, were pretty well dominated by songs in English.
Well, in the winter spectrum, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that might be just because of the sort of universality of English as a lingua, well, I don't want to say lingua franca.
But like the language of business and like the second language that is taught everywhere in Europe.
Right.
So there's a bonus of at least, you know, at least the people watching at home can pick out words
right.
from their English classes.
Exactly. that somebody from the United Kingdom, Malta, and Ireland would probably have more luck getting their message across than, say, somebody from Turkey.
Or Portugal.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So that span of time where Ireland won 4 times in the span of 5 years, that was during the language
including war. River Dance year.
Yep. Heck yeah. Malta came really close to winning. Yeah, Malta actually stepped out after 72, then they came back in 75, and then just disappeared completely until 1991.
As a country?
Yeah. It's like Rigadoon.
They vanished into the Mediterranean.
Yes. But they came back in 91, and they've only sung in English. Mm-hmm. They've had like one song with a little bit of Maltese in there, but they came in third place in 92, and they basically just ran a run of top 10 finishes through 1998, mm-hmm. With another third place with Kiara is the one that I love. All of these songs were in English. But then as soon as the language rule was dropped and you were given sort of an open selection starting from 1999, you saw Malta's fortune start to falter a little bit. You see Ireland's fortune start to falter. England, the UK, I should say, not necessarily England, but you know, sorry to my Welsh and Scottish friends.
Yeah.
And Northern Irish, of course. But now the field is pretty level linguistically. A country can sing in whatever language they want to sing in. Oftentimes it's English, but they can do whatever the heck they want. So mm-hmm.
I think the English advantage definitely can explain why Sweden has been so successful. Because I shouldn't think that Swedish, much like Dutch, wouldn't be a particularly beautiful vocal range to sing in that would be palatable for absolutely everyone.
You have just angered so many melodists.
Everyone's just
like Charlotte Nielsen is gonna barreling.
They really are just gonna.
Charlotte Corelli, excuse me.
You know, it's
I'm coming for you. Yes, yeah, Swedish is a butt ugly language. There, I said it. Yeah, you heard me. I'm fine.
That's a fail. That's an incorrect. Nay.
You know, if they made that change a couple of years later. In 72, say they make it in 74, 75, mm-hmm. ABBA would have had to have sung Waterloo
in Swedish.
Swedish.
Yeah, I bet it would have been charming.
And the entire world of pop music would potentially be different.
I have to go back on what I immediately said anyway, because I just thought, you know, what else would be probably a really weird language to sing in? And I'm like, probably like one of the Slavic languages. But no, Valenay was a banger, an absolute jam.
Yes.
So Slovenian is a totally acceptable language to sing in, so... So go for it. Also, why does England keep sending English songs? They've got 3 normal languages that they can send.
The thing
More than three, probably.
I mean, we haven't had a single song in Welsh. We've had nothing in Scottish Gaelic.
And they sure could.
They could.
Or Irish Gaelic.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much it's crossed into Northern Ireland. But yeah, I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And it should be a thing. But yeah, the United Kingdom has only ever sent songs in English.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if anything in the national final level has even made it.
For real?
I can't.
You would think that the Scots would have mustered up something. Nicola Sturgeon would have phoned in.
We've had Welsh at Junior Eurovision.
Oh, that's right, you said that.
Yeah, which was lovely. They didn't do very well, but it was only their first year. They're still getting their feet underneath them. It was very pretty.
And they performed as Wales, right? Not as the United Kingdom?
As Wales, yes.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love Wales. They're cool looking. Oh, Never mind. The Welsh. Never mind.
The Welsh.
So we moved to Do Whatever You Want in 1999. Since then, there have been two winners that were not in English.
Yeah.
So Portugal.
Portugal, 2017. Sam's favorite Eurovision song of all time.
And
Amar pelo shtoysh.
Yeah.
The Russian Grannies did not win.
They did not.
So
win.
It was not Russian.
And that was partially in English. Party for everybody dance.
Oh, God.
Come on and dance. Come on and boom, boom.
I take back what I said about English being a beautiful language.
Especially when you say it in style of Russian granny.
Oh, I love them.
Have some perepechki.
And it wouldn't have been Hard Rock Hallelujah. It was in English.
Right.
No, it was in 2007. It was Serbia. And
Malika.
They sang in Serbian. I am not super familiar with this song. Should we give it a quick listen?
Yeah. Maria Sarifovic with Molitva. It should be noted that there have been a pair of winners that have had languages other than English in it, but they've really been sort of bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
The chorus of 2016's winner, 1944 by Jamala,
mm-hmm.
had Crimean Tatar in the chorus,
uh-huh.
but it was primarily in English. So that was Ukraine's win there. Mm-hmm. But also for Ukraine, their other winner, 2004, Wild Dances by Ruslana, was partially in Ukrainian as well, which is very, very cool.
Good.
Yeah.
The bilingual thing is something that I've noticed is quite popular in the past couple of years. I just think on France. France sang in both
mm-hmm.
French and English this last year.
Denmark this year had, I think, four languages
yep.
in it.
Yeah.
Even though mostly English, but that
mm-hmm.
second chorus did have basically was a hodgepodge of everything near Denmark.
Yeah, there was some French, there was some Danish,
German.
There was...
Yep.
Yeah.
English,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
Serbia does like to send Serbian...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Lyrics, don't they?
Yeah, I think a lot of the Balkan region sort of countries like
really
to do that.
Really
Montenegro sends songs in Montenegrin
mm-hmm.
and
there
so
are,
on.
Yeah, there are a handful of countries that have only sent songs in their native language, maybe a few that have been bilingual. But,
was that like Georgia?
Georgia generally sings in English. They've really only had
yeah.
like one or two songs in like the past 2 years have
mm-hmm.
been in Georgia, but generally they've been in English.
Mm-hmm.
Andorra? Sung either bilingually or in Catalan.
Italy.
Italy
sends just Italian.
Yeah.
They have the bonus of having a very musical language.
Yeah. Well, they have sent bilingual. They have gone bilingual.
Mm.
But yeah, there's always Italian in there.
Mm-hmm.
France, they've never gone fully English. There was one time back in 2008, I want to say, when Sébastien Tellier was going to sing the song Divine. It was going to be originally entirely in English. And they had an argument about it in Parliament.
Wow.
That sounds like a very French thing to do,
oh, yeah.
I will say.
And it was such a huge deal that he ended up adding lines in French to the live version
Good.
Of the song.
It sounds very French to have to debate something of cultural significance
oh, yeah.
and to involve the government in it.
Yeah. Yes.
Was there a thing, I know it's not the case anymore because Toy was entirely in English, but
mm-hmm.
there was a thing at one point where there had to be some amount of Hebrew in Israel's song?
At least 50%. And normally they would go almost entirely Hebrew.
Yeah.
They would start to dabble bilingual a couple years ago, and now I think it's, you know.
That was the decision of their broadcaster
yeah.
or
I believe
like a government sort
well,
of thing?
It is a government-owned broadcaster,
oh,
but I think it was sort of broadcaster's choice.
True.
Let's see, Luxembourg, never really sang.
Sang in Luxembourgeois.
They did have
yes,
one in Luxembourgish
do.
Ones, actually.
Oh, is it its own language or a dialect of...
I think it's its own language, but it's got elements of all the stuff that's around it. It's sort of linguistic tofu. Just
yeah.
takes the flavor of what's... Just soaks it all up.
That sounds like
oh,
a
Luxembourg
mess.
Is going to just... they're jumping on us. Sweden's going to hate this podcast, too. Let's draw all the battle lines right now. Let's do it.
Morocco.
So I'm calling you out, Switzerland. Romanche is terrible.
Oh.
I have absolutely no idea what Romanche sounds like.
Morocco only sang once, so by default, their one song was in
Arabic.
It was in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Portugal sends songs almost entirely in Portuguese.
Good
I think there's one or two that have been partially in English, but generally they stick to native language.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Australia, Ireland, Malta, and the UK have all done official language songs.
Australia has been so strong recently, too.
But the thing is,
English is their only...
It's their only official language, but of course there's an Aboriginal culture there.
Yep.
Actually, the song that came in second in their national final was... partially in a native Aboriginal language, Yakuchinchara Pichachachara, I think it's called. I apologize for any speakers of that language.
So you haven't done the most offensive thing in this episode, I think.
I'm golden. This is why we're friends. You are the foils here. I can look like a schmuck. You have you to fall back on and make me feel better. So yeah, it was Pichachachara, I think is how it's pronounced, but it's an Aboriginal language. So Electric Fields 2000 and whatever. Can we just play a little clip of that just for my own personal?
I'm curious.
Oh,
Yeah.
When that don't
another language that we haven't heard yet at Eurovision that almost made it through this year. Second place in the Danish national final was partially in Greenlandic, which we haven't heard yet.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Our 51st state. Greenlandic is that's a native language.
It is a native language. It is closest to the languages of northern Canada, Inuktitut and
that makes sense.
Inuktitut, things like that. So it's very, very cool.
I want stuff like that. Like,
me
I appreciate
too.
A country like Serbia that always sends Serbian because, I'm not hearing the same kind of thing over and over. I'm always there for the variety in Eurovision.
Right,
always
absolutely.
Like that.
All right, Sam, I'm going to try and stump Sam.
Oh, no.
And if you have the Wikipedia page open, then maybe I won't stump you. But the entry with the most languages...
The Bendik Singers for Norway, It's Just a Game.
How could
that
she?
Is,
how does she do
that? That is correct.
I happen to have the Wikipedia page open, but I knew that anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well, sure, Jane. It was mostly in English and French, but had lyrics in Spanish, Italian, Dutch, German, Irish, Serbo-Croatian, Hebrew, Finnish, Swedish, and Norwegian. 12 languages. Several of which Danny has opinions about.
Several of which were not Romansh. I'm here for you, Romansh. All right. And notice they did not sing. Oh, question. One of the...
you can't just go back to being...
Dude, I had another point.
Switching gears very well. Okay, you go. My question is almost apropos.
You're giving me whiplash, dude. I was going to bring up another one of my favorite sort of hyperlinguistic songs.
Mm-hmm.
2012, Bulgaria. Sophie Marinova sang a song called Love Unlimited.
One of my favorite cell phone plans.
How many languages here? Sang in Bulgarian or primarily English?
Primarily the verses were in Bulgarian. And then the choruses switched to Turkish, Greek, Spanish, Serbo-Croatian.
Oof.
French, Romani, Italian, Azerbaijani, Arabic, and English. And it should be noted that Azerbaijan has never actually sung a song at Eurovision in Azerbaijan.
That was actually going to be my question.
Bulgaria got there first.
I was going to, because I know that Eurovision was in Baku not too long ago at all. 2011? 2012. And I was like, did they send a song in Azerbaijan? They sent it in English. I can only say, or Russian?
English.
English.
They only sung in English.
They're close with Russia, though. I'm remembering
they
that,
are.
Right?
Yeah. Both, you know, geographically and culturally. Yeah.
Yes.
But no, their language is actually closer to Turkish, really. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, most people there are bilingual, Azerbaijani and Russian.
Just
some speak English. Yeah. Most can understand Turkish, but it is its own language.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sophie Marinova was the first to break the Azerbaijani language barrier. And honestly, this song was a bop.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
literally missed out on making it to the final through a tiebreak.
Oh,
geez, that's a real indication.
Yeah.
You know what we could do to
yes.
help? Let's play a clip.
Yes!
Sophie Marinara.
she is tasty.
Real Bulgarian dish. moving on.
Yes. let us never speak of this again.
Yeah. So we've talked about a few minority languages already, but there are a few others. Danny, you mentioned the dancing grandmas.
Yes.
From Russia.
Yes. I mean, call that dancing. It was more swaying.
Dancing. I mean, there's baking, there's dancing, you know, whatever.
Yes.
This had a language that I'm guessing this is the only time this has come up in Eurovision history.
Dothraki.
Dothraki.
Yes. It's Tolkien Elvish.
No. Yes. It is. Sam, I'm going to throw it to you because I don't know how to say this word.
Udmurt.
Udmurt?
Udmurt.
Okay. Yes.
Where is this from?
This is a native minority language in Russia, primarily spoken in the Udmurt Republic.
Is this like Siberia? Is this way out there?
It is kind of out there, but it's sort of on the western
side. We
cross
the Urals.
It's a Uralic language, so I think it's like kind of tucked up in there.
Gotcha.
Way up in there. Way up in them Urals. so, yes, the Buranovsky Babushki, the grannies of Buranovo, sang Party for Everybody, primarily in Udmurt with the language switching to English during the chorus.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, Udmurt, it's not really related to Russian. It's actually a little bit closer to...
So, like, Uralic is, like, that's, like, Finnish and Hungarian.
It's
that's, like, those pocket languages.
Yeah. It's kind of on its own, but it's sort of in that language family. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're really intelligible.
No, because, like, Finnish is nowhere
near Hungarian.
Like, even Finnish and Estonian are pretty far apart.
Yeah, somewhat intelligible in certain words. But, yeah, Udmurt is kind of its own thing, but it's a member of that family. But, yeah, so, Party for Everybody Dance.
Give me more of that. I want more of the weird stuff. Give me the weird stuff, Eurovision. You give me the weird, you know, you wear bells and you dance in shirts that look like they're made from shredded paper. I'm talking to you, Portugal. We love you. You were robbed this year.
Yes.
I want more. It's insulting to call a language weird, but I want more variety. I want more. I want more of the stuff that I haven't heard before.
You want stuff that you're not expecting.
Yes, exactly. I want I want to be pleasantly surprised.
Like the time that Monaco sent a song partially in Tahitian.
For what?
Yes.
So take me back. Paint me a picture.
This is 2006.
Recent, okay.
Yeah, very recent. Actually, one of Monaco's, I think... Was
last
that
appearance.
I think that may have been there. That was their last appearance.
The song in partially in Tahitian?
It was in French and Tahitian. It was called La Coco Dance.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
This is worse and worse as things go on.
Séverine Ferrer, who is not actually from Tahiti.
Yeah, I know. This sounds about right, yeah.
She's French, but she grew up on Réunion.
Okay, so we are at least in an overseas département.
Yeah, exactly. The song did not do incredibly well. It came in 21st place in its semifinal, and this is the time when the semifinals were massive.
Mm-hmm.
Only 14 points overall. It did not go well. It was third from the bottom, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it really bad?
It's pretty. It was kind of off key.
I want to hear the Tahitian parts. Derek, do it! Okay, those harmonies were unfortunate.
That was a thing that happened.
It's uncomfortable.
I feel the need to apologize to the beautiful island of Tahiti.
I wasn't disgusted by the song itself, but yeah, I think it had a very deserving place in the rankings.
I'm sorry to say. And it's sorry to say, you know, goodbye to Monaco on that note.
Come back, Monaco. Come on.
A couple of other interesting minority languages. We've had Sami a couple of times. Obviously, Kano, the real winner this year.
You're not gonna let that go, are you?
No.
Your Norwegian is showing.
It's all around me. Norway's entry this year had Sami, which is a native language in the northern portion of Scandinavia.
As not even just a throwaway part, but like a central component of the song.
And Norway's entry in 1980 was it entirely in Sami?
No, it was primarily in Norwegian, but the name of the song, which is repeated throughout the song, Sami Eidnan, which means like Sami homeland, was, you know, repeated throughout. So it was the first time we heard the language, and it was also very yoik heavy at the end, which is great. If you've ever seen the movie The Thing, like the new version of The Thing.
Nobody's seen that, Sam.
I don't know, but I saw the preview in the theater, and I was like, oh, they're playing Sami Adnan. They're literally singing Sami Adnan in the new version.
Oh, in like the remake from like 2012?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The most excited I've ever seen anyone for the remake of The Thing.
Yeah, it's because they put the Eurovision record. Because that's what gets my heart.
That's how you get the Sam vote.
But Eurovision in Eurovision.
You mentioned there was a bit of Romani in the 2012 Bulgaria entry. Mm-hmm. There were also songs entirely or largely in Romani from the Czech Republic in 2008 and North Macedonia in 2013.
Oh, that song's great. Because it was a mix of Macedonian, mm-hmm. this beautiful sort of classic romantic ballad, and then halfway in, the legendary Roma gypsy / Romani singer Esma Recepova, rest in peace, came in with this incredible sound in Romani, I think, and just brought the house down. And she just like owned the stage like a bouncing volcano, and just you couldn't. It was two songs that were kind of squished together in a way that was very, very odd and yet really alluring at the same time. That you had this sort of romantic ballad song, and then suddenly this incredible gypsy party coming in, and you kind of got swept up in it. Then again, I have a very soft spot in my heart for this song, considering that I actually stayed in the same hotel as that delegation that year. Hmm. So I would see Esma Redzepova like eating her cornflakes in the morning, and she would look freaking resplendent.
Ah, good. Ah. She puts it all together just to eat some cornflakes.
She was lovely.
Now, minority languages are interesting. What's a little more interesting is languages that aren't real. And
I've been bracing for this. I had a feeling that something like this had to have happened.
Thankfully, this has happened a few times. And I'm going to start with the big one, to me, anyway. I'm not going to say anything before going to this clip besides that this is Junior Eurovision.
Yes.
This is from 2008. It's from Georgia.
Oh, man.
Derek, hit it.
I wish that our listeners could have listened to that for the full 3 minutes. I feel like that song is a manifestation of that meme of my last three brain cells. Just... I do have to say, while we were throwing to that, while we were listening, impressive harmonies.
Incredible.
I will say,
yeah, really impressive, really harmonies.
Yeah.
So let's...
But at
let's,
the same time.
So yes, so that was Bizkebi with Bzzz.
In case you missed the lyric, it's bzzz.
I would love to see the karaoke version of this. Yeah. For Georgia, Junior Eurovision 2008.
The winners.
The winners.
The winners.
That song won. I'm going to paint another word picture for you. This is... Yes. Basically, it is three 10-year-olds dressed like bees.
They're not just bees. They're like vinyl... It's like vinyl avant-garde bee costume.
Yeah.
Hatari wasps.
Yes, Hatari wasps. Oh, that's so good. Yes, yeah, that's right. Except, you know, less spikes. Mm. But it is shiny, black and yellow, and they are just zippa 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 zazabin.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to just say it's a beautiful thing that we have a contest where 10-year-olds can make bee noises for 3 minutes and they're the pride of Europe.
Not only were they the winners that year,
but wearing a little stinger hat.
Like, she had these stingers coming out of her butt, her hair buns. It was so.
Hatari wishes.
I know. This is probably what inspired Hatari to, get the spikes in the game.
The original Hatari.
But like the vocal studio that gave the world Bizkebi ended up providing the vocal teams and the kids and the ensembles for Junior Eurovision for Georgia many, many other times. They've won Junior Eurovision a number of times.
Yeah, they're sort of a Junior Eurovision powerhouse.
They really are.
Georgia. Of all things. Basketball and Junior Eurovision.
Georgia and Malta are disproportionately great at junior Eurovision. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. It's interesting.
It's just astounding.
Yeah. And how they, neither of these nations have won senior Eurovision, but they seem to, but that's neither here nor there.
If they wanted, send their junior Eurovision act as their Eurovision act?
Not the same year, but San Marino.
Old friends, yes.
All right, so Junior Eurovision 2014 for San Marino was a 5 or 6 part girl group called the Peppermints.
Okay, this is ringing a bell.
Yes,
go on.
Really cute, singing a song called Breaking My Heart. And one of the girls, Anita Simoncini, was actually San Marinese. Most of the other girls were Italian. But Anita was actually from San Marino. She turned, at the time, you had to be 15 or under to sing at junior, and you have to be 16 or older to sing at senior. She turned 16 prior to the 2015 contest in Vienna.
Scandalous.
And she was drafted to sing at senior within 6 months of singing at junior.
Oh, I see.
Since then, they've actually created a bit of a donut hole. So you have to be 14 and under now to sing at junior.
Okay.
So you have the sort of 15-year-old donut.
15-year-olds not allowed.
Which is kind of
go to school.
I think it's kind of crappy.
Sorry, 15-year-olds, you don't get dreams. So that's obviously the best imaginary language, but it's not the only imaginary language. Belgium has done it twice.
Yeah.
What?
Because when you have three official languages, you have to come up with another one.
The most politic way of going forward is going, no one gets a language. We're just going to hire Georgia to write us. What is it? Tell me, what is this song? What is it?
Well,
they've
done it twice.
Okay.
First one is in 2003, a band called Urban Trad with a song called Sanomi, which came in second.
Lovely.
It was actually pretty cool. It had this sort of folky, but like it was pretty cool. I think we can throw to that. I think I've got that one in my collection. So yeah, let's hear a bit of Sodomy. A couple years later, Belgium came back. It's like, you know what? We're going to do that thing again. And they brought in a band called Ishtar with the song O Ulysses, which was basically a girl dressed up as a giant peppermint. And back to the peppermints.
Yes.
And it sounded like something that would have been not out of place in like a Saturday morning children's cartoon theme song, but like in the sort of sweet kind of way, not the sort of hyperactive way that our Saturday morning cartoons were.
Yes.
So not like DuckTales, the Woohoo.
Woohoo.
Yes. Okay.
Not Cottontails.
Very, very sweet.
Can we play a clip of DuckTales?
No. Oh. Don't think we can.
We can't? All right.
The Dutch have also... here in Belgium.
Oh, what were we talking about?
Disney's lawyer army here to
sue
us.
Yay!
Yeah, the Dutch also did it in 2007. A group called Treble, a song called Amam Banda, that was, I think, partially in an imaginary language, because why the hell not? It didn't do very well, but, I mean, it's I think it's really hard to break the high watermark that Sanomi and then eventually Biscabi gave us.
Biscabi.
That will haunt your dreams.
That's going to be, when I wake up next with sleep paralysis, that's what's going to be playing in my brain, and I see shadows in the corner.
When we're in Europe, I'm gonna discreetly change like your alarm in the morning.
Roll out of bed
and murder me.
Yeah,
it's gonna be great. It's gonna be so much fun.
It's gonna be great.
So this isn't another non-existent language thing, but kind of in a different way. One of my favorite songs from 2018, and in all seriousness, one of my favorite Eurovision songs, period. It just keeps climbing the ladder somehow, is Higher Ground, which is Denmark's Viking boy band song.
Yep.
From last year.
The Viking calendar boys.
Yeah.
So much eyeliner.
So much. Stocks on Danish eyeliner were just through the roof. Anyway.
Maybe he's born.
Maybe it's Rasmussen.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. All right, go on.
Love you guys. So there's a story behind Higher Ground, and it's actually kind of a weird, like, multinational story, because it's about this Norwegian...
A chieftain.
Yeah, yeah.
A guy.
A military fella.
Yes, MF, for sure.
So this MF...
yes.
Yes, go on.
So the MF, he's
Magnus Erlandsen.
Yes.
I'm seeing this now.
Okay. Basically, it's a Norwegian guy who, basically he chose, at a time when everything was solved by fighting, just chose not to fight. And Rasmussen, the singer that was doing this song, or the songwriter, I guess I don't know who it was, wanted to have a little bit in the language that he would have spoken at the time.
Mm.
But it's lost. Partially lost. Something to that effect.
Yeah, because Magnus Erlandsen, I'm looking at his biography now, he was originally from what's now Scotland, actually, the Orkney Islands, but at the time it was Norway.
Very Norse.
Yeah. Yeah. It still kind of is a very Norse neck of the woods, but yeah, so the Norse that would have been spoken on the Orkneys, that has been lost to time.
Yeah, and the legend about him is especially prevalent and popular in Denmark.
Mm.
So it's a Norwegian, Scottish guy who's popular in Denmark and so on and so forth. But they wanted to have this phrase, the last line of the chorus is take a leap, land on higher ground, and then have this very, very, very low bass droning thing of them basically saying the same thing, only in that language, but we don't know enough about that language to do it. So what they did was they used Icelandic because
it's closest.
Yes. That is exactly why. It's the closest thing they can get. So there's this very cool low thing that happens after the chorus in that song is in
your,
Icelandic
you
because
can't make
it's,
your yeah. own old Norse. An Icelandic bot is fine.
Yeah.
So. The thing is, like, Icelandic has not changed in centuries and centuries and centuries. Like, your average normal Icelander today can pick up an ancient saga and read it more easily than we could read something from,
like,
say,
Chaucer.
Yeah, a hell of a lot easier. Easier than us reading Shakespeare, obviously. Which
well,
really isn't saying
Sam and I are reading Shakespeare, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's really, it was a very cool linguistic trick of them. Good on you, Rasmussen. Good on you.
It was a cool way of doing that and still kind of...
They finished top 10, didn't they?
I believe they did. They did a lot better than I thought they would.
Good on.
Yeah.
But
ninth place, yeah.
A lot of that song is atmosphere. Having that language, that sort of chant in there really takes the song to, I guess you could say, higher ground for me. We've had a few new languages pop up in the last couple of years. We want to talk about recent Eurovisions.
New?
As well. Well,
you mean
I mean, new to Eurovision.
We've already talked about, you know, the B language, whatever it was that Urban Trad were singing. But yeah.
That's right.
So
we were singing Leet Speak.
Ooh.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
Vomit-inducing. What is the newest... The most recent introduction of a language to Eurovision?
The newest was this year. Most of Georgia's song from this year was just in Georgian. But there were parts of it in Abkhaz.
Which is?
So the Abkhaz language is a member of the Northwest Caucasian language family. It really only has about a handful of similarly, you know, influenced language.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very small language family. Honestly, there are only about three or four other languages in the family, mostly spoken in the Caucasus region. It's not really related to Georgian. It can be written in the Georgian script. Not necessarily. It's one of the official languages of Abkhazia. About 100,000 people speak it there. About 200,000 people speak it overall. Not very well, you know, spoken. It's not something I know
there's
a lot about.
There's not a Duolingo for Abkhaz.
Not yet, no. No, not yet.
We actually also had four new language appearances in 2018.
Yes.
So
we welcome them back. But.
Yeah. First song fully in Armenian,
mm-hmm.
as Kami.
Yes.
Yep.
First song fully in Georgian, Which I'm not going to try to say.
Sheni Gulitsvia. For you.
Thank you.
Ethno jazz band. I forget what they were actually called.
Iriao.
That's it. But I love that their name is actually Ethno jazz band Iriao.
So, those are the first two entirely in those languages. They're
nice.
Which, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is cool.
Serbia's song Nova Deca had a little bit of Torlakian, which sounds like a Star Trek thing, but it's actually a dialect of Serbo-Croatian.
Okay.
And the winner, Toy by Netta,
yes,
contains a single word in Japanese. So technically,
what is it?
It is baka.
Baka, baka, baka. She wasn't just fluffy. She was actually saying baka, baka, yeah. which means stupid in Japanese.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
She wasn't your toy, you stupid boy.
You stupid
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, Danny.
I like it.
Yeah.
Now, it's good to know that weebs are becoming mainstream.
Yeah. 2017, we had our first song in Belarusian. Oh, that's a great song.
It was so
Historia.
Good. Historia Maya Zitia, yeah. Story of My Life by Navi Belia. We had Belarusian many years previous at Junior, mm-hmm. but to see it actually at the big stage was very, very good.
Is it more common for Junior Eurovision to be a lot more experimental or more just like, you know, let's send the native language?
It's actually mandated.
It is
mandated to at least have a significant portion of the song in native language. English is welcome for part of it,
mm-hmm.
but you have to have at least some.
Oh, fine. Yes.
And we've actually had a couple of languages appear at Junior that have not made it to Senior.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before.
Like B.
Azerbaijani made mm-hmm. it there. Latin. We've had, yeah.
Vatican City finally sent. Who's singing Latin? Romania?
Ireland, actually.
This makes sense.
Yeah, Ireland.
So there's never been a Latin Eurovision entry?
No, even though the Albanian entry...
What are they going to sing? The DAC, right?
I don't know.
The Albanian song from 2012 had a title in Latin.
Okay.
It was just in Albanian.
Gotcha.
But yeah, Ireland's Junior Eurovision debut back in 2015 was primarily in Irish, but about half the chorus was... In Latin, which is very cool.
Cool the word?
I think so. I'm a linguistics buff. So we have had Kazakh at Junior. We've had Welsh.
Yes.
We've had B.
We have had B.
Yep.
Iran sources indicate that we have B.
We have had We had a little bit more Japanese. Japanese was broken in 2006 by the Serbian song Junior. We have Maltese a lot more commonly at Junior than we do at Senior.
Makes sense.
I take Junior Eurovision a bit more. It almost sounds more my cup of tea than regular Eurovision.
Well, now that you've seen the winner from 2008, I think we've broken some interesting new ground.
I've cracked the seal. I am pouring it all out.
Oh, yeah. This is going to make for some fun episodes in the future, guys.
Yeah.
Ooh, wait till he sees Volshevny Krolik.
Can forget that until I inevitably see it.
And probably. Then you're never going to forget
okay.
it.
Language. It's what unites us. Never mind. It is what always invariably separates us.
Except at Eurovision, now that everyone just sings in English.
Yeah.
We did it.
It's a party for everybody.
We did it. We solved language.
Nice.
Well, anyway.
That sounds about right.
So, folks, if you have any input, any comments that you want to share with us, we would love to hear your thoughts.
If you have any gripes about my aspersions of several noble nations on this episode, feel free.
But remember, Danny's not on Twitter.
Remember, I'm not on Twitter. So,
so check it out on us on Twitter at 12pointsUSA.
That's also where you find us on Facebook. You can email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can hit me up directly at ESC Insider on Twitter.
And you can hit me up on Twitter at Eric is tweeting. That's E-R-I-K is tweeting.
Ah, and Danny Twitter. Will just pass along any messages we get from the ambassadors from all the nations that you ticked off tonight.
Glad I squeezed in Ireland at the end there. Well, all right, America. Stop listening now.
Ahora.